Busio, pallone appoggiato per Gizchier. Il Venezia in vantaggio con Christian Gizchier.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Serie A Spotlight. We're your hosts, Matt.
You know what time it is? It's finally happening, baby! The Serie B playoff special with Serie A Spotlight!
Bro just recovered from fever and a cold where he couldn't speak for an entire week, so we couldn't record. Now that his voice is back, he's getting a bit
guys, I was losing my mind. I was inside for 5 days with a bloody stubborn cold. I was trying to shake it off. I had no voice.
You're sounding a bit raspy.
No, but to be honest, I'm not even fully recovered. But yeah, that was essential, I feel, for the Serie B special. This is what we have to do.
This is what everyone has been excited for. It surprises me that people are as passionate as us about the Serie B playoffs and just the Serie B in general. This is what we're going to do. You know what? We know the Euros are starting probably today when you guys are listening.
You'll have to do that. Or yesterday.
Or yesterday.
Or last week.
It all depends on when you're listening, guys. But upon launch, which is Friday very early morning, this is the same day that the Euros are starting. But you know what? We're available today. This episode is available today. It's available next week, the week after. Whenever you guys want a little cigarette of information regarding the Serie B, the newly promoted teams, and what went down in the playoffs, that's what we're here to do over here.
There isn't much English content covering the Serie B playoffs, so hopefully we're here to fill in that void for you. We've done quite a bit of research, so...
Yeah. Last week we took the week off, obviously, because Jake was sick, and we did just release an episode with the brilliant Anthony Locascio. For those of you that haven't heard of him, he's a brilliant comedian that is located in Australia. He's Italian Greek. He breeds football through and through. I was really impressed. I didn't particularly notice this during our episode because I was so engaged in the conversation with him because he's such a nice guy as well. So easy to speak with him and it just flowed. But he has incredible ball knowledge, the references he was making, the people he was mentioning. He could honestly be a third on this show.
And his grandfather was a goalkeeper at a very high level as well. He has a very interesting story. You should go check it out. And not to mention, he had a run-in with one of the founding members of Palermo. Or he had an original scrapbook with the documents, the blueprints of the stadium, I believe.
He also... He managed a restaurant that Boateng's ex-girlfriend's brother worked in as one of his, as he called him. Guys, don't quote me on this. He was one of my waiter bitches. So go do give it a listen, guys. We did notice slight technical issues when it comes to the volume. Both mics weren't being picked up, so I sound really loud, guys. If you guys find me annoying, I truly apologize.
He's obnoxiously loud. Obnoxiously louder than usual.
It was not my intention. But without further ado, bro, I think we should start getting into this beautiful...
I'm repping Cagliari for last season. We've got Venezia on the right, and Matthew's wearing the neutral colors of... nothing.
That's just a plain Jane, baby.
Plain Jane.
Let's bid farewell, obviously, to the three teams that didn't manage to stay in Serie A last season. So in last place, heartfelt goodbye to Salernitana, who showed so much character, so much grit, so much heart, and a few very cool players that we got to see over there. Maybe not the best performances from the likes of Manolas and Boateng at the back.
And Sabatini in general, the players he brought in to save them really didn't pull through.
Disappointing. Sassuolo, another heartfelt goodbye. I know I poked fun at Sassuolo. I hope they get relegated, this and that. But we went to watch Sassuolo at the Mappe a couple of seasons ago against Inter. We love Sassuolo.
They were a good footballing school, you know, bringing up players, a good business model, you know.
Locatelli played there as well, man.
Scamacca, Raspadori, Fratesi, all these guys came through Sassuolo. The problem is that they didn't reinvest the money from the sales effectively and they went straight back down to Serie B, which is a shame because I can't help but feel that they turned a very good business model into a failure. towards the end.
Absolutely. It all comes
heavy reliance on Berardi.
Verona did the great escape. They have a similar issue to Sassuolo in that sense when it comes to the investments not being on par. But they had a great escape thanks to a fantastic manager and a few coups here and there as well.
Yeah. The manager.
So on and so forth.
Is now at Lazio.
Yes,
Marco Baroni.
Best of fucking luck, brother. I can't believe I'm going to be rooting for Lazio a little bit next season. I love Baroni.
Yeah.
And Frosinone, who were pure vibes. I was really impressed by what they were capable of doing, both on an individual basis, their players, all loaned in. So obviously not that heartfelt a goodbye, because a lot of their players will be sticking around and we see them playing for the top teams. Eusebio Di Francesco, brother, I take back a lot of what I said about you, because sure, defensively you weren't completely sound, but with that team you did do, he did do great work, especially after taking over Grosso. With a totally new squad that hadn't played together, I think he did decently.
A neutral's dream, to be honest, to Di Francesco, because he gets these smaller teams and he makes them play an open game.
Exactly.
You know, so you just put on a game, and no matter who it is, if they're playing Frosinone, you know you're going to get a good game.
Exactly.
You know, you can put over 2 goals on it, 5 euro, sit back. Just enjoy.
Super, super entertaining. Even the game against Milan, I believe there was a 4-2 or a 3-2. They just brought it to everyone, man.
The Cagliari game as well.
They're absolutely fearless, man. And welcome, obviously, to Parma, who topped Serie B last season. Como, who came second. Really cool project, which we'll be getting into. And Venezia, obviously, that won the playoffs. Let's start off with the playoffs, bro.
Yeah.
So, naturally, with Parma and Como finishing in first and second place, respectively, they automatically went to the semi-finals of the competition. The semi-finals are played over 2 legs. The final is played over 2 legs. However, the quarter-finals is a singular fixture. It does go to extra time if the teams are a draw. However, if extra time finishes in a draw, then the team that was higher than the other team in the rankings goes through automatically. So, no penalty shootouts anywhere in the Serie B competition. Kind of love it, kind of hate it. We're not here to share our opinion, though.
and the teams that were taking part in order from third all the way down to eighth were Venezia, Cremonese, Catanzaro, Palermo, Sampdoria, and Brescia.
Yeah, so the quarterfinals were between Catanzaro and Brescia, and the other one was between Palermo and Sampdoria. Let's start by putting a bit of a Serie B spotlight on Catanzaro Brescia, that finished 4-2. Catanzaro were the home side, managed by Vivarini, a very progressive manager. Keep your eyes out. I do reckon he'll be in Serie A very, very soon. And Maranz Brescia. The previous encounters between this team was Brescia 1, Catanzaro 1. And Catanzaro 2, Brescia 3. So even though Catanzaro finished above Brescia, Brescia had the upper hand when it comes to the direct encounters. This was a very rainy night. Obviously, like I said earlier, Brescia needed a win. A draw after extra time would do for Catanzaro. And they did line up as follows. It was a 4-4-1-1 formation for Catanzaro. Pardon me if I'm going to butcher these names. Fulignati in goal and a backline of Veroli, Antonini, Brigenti and Scognamillo. A midfield 4 of Iari, Van de Putte, Pontisso, Petriccione and Sunas. And Biaschi was playing behind Yamello. We know Yamello.
Yeah.
We like Yamello. He's like 33 years old. He's 6'1", but he's lengthy. He's got some pace and he's quite intelligent. For Brescia, wait for it. You guys will know when it comes. It was a 4-4-2 formation with Lezzerini in goal, Dickman at right back and Yellow in left back, Cistana and Adorni as the centre-back partnership. Galazzi out on the right, Besaggio out on the left, and a double pivot of Bisoli and Paghera, with Mancini and Bianchi starting up front together. Now, it was actually Brescia that opened the scoring through Galazzi. It was an in-swinging cross to the far post that was headed centrally by Mancini to Galazzi, who tapped it in. Catanzaro got one back through Yamello in the 26th minute as he received the ball from a clever flick with his back towards goal. He beat the defender on the turn before finishing. Keeper got a touch. I think he should have done better there. In the 52nd minute, Brescia once again took the lead, guys. It was Mancini, the guy that assisted the first goal. It was another in-swinging cross to the far post that caused confusion between two Catanzaro defenders, and Mancini capitalized by firing in. Clearly, Mancini likes to get to the end of these, the striker.
Yeah.
And then it was Catanzaro attacking and attacking and attacking until the 96th minute when they managed to find the equalizer through Donnarumma. This is Anderuolo Dell'Ex, because he did play for Brescia before.
This is Alfredo. Is his name Alfredo? I believe it's Alfredo Donnarumma, right? Because Antonio was Gigio's brother.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I believe so. This was the substitutes linked up as the corner was flicked on by Oliveri to the far post and headed in by Donnarumma. So now it goes to extra time and Catanzaro have the upper hand. A, momentum, because they scored in the 96th minute at home. Everyone is losing their shit and it's raining. It's mental, yeah, guys. Yeah. It's fucking crazy. And B, because they could technically pass the ball around, not concede, and they go through. However, that's not what they did, as in the 105th minute, it was Brignola, the substitute, with a fine scissor kick to beat the keeper at the near post after a YML lacrosse. It was totally unmarked, and Adorini and Yellow were really poor as they were stepping all over each other's toes. And then in the 122nd minute, Yemello was clean through as Brescia piled everyone forward and he finished it off with a smart dink over the Russian keeper. It was nice of Brignola not to steal the goal, and he shielded the ball as he let it roll in.
I think Yamello's a really interesting player because he comes deep and he allows those wingers to kind of get forward, but then he can totally finish a move off himself, even
absolutely.
In the air. He's a pretty good striker for
Serie B. He is. I like him. I think I had picked him up in some kind of, not manager mode, what's it called? Football manager. I believe I had picked him up a couple of years ago. I think this was a great fucking showing for the first quarter final that took place. It showed what the Serie B playoffs are all about.
Yeah.
I thought Brescia had done it, bro. 96 minutes, you'd never reckon a team would get back into it. But Catanzaro were causing them a lot of problems. It's like the fact that Catanzaro weren't scoring was solely down to Brescia piling all men back and just coping. They weren't really in control after they went one goal up, and Catanzaro were causing so many problems to their swift and direct movement. I think it was just that the home team with the advantage, I think that's what essentially got them over the line.
Absolutely, man. And it was interesting to see that these are technically both 4-4-2s,
yeah,
right? But they're so wildly different. You have Vivarini's, I believe Vivarini, his name is, yes, of
yes,
Catanzaro.
Catanzaro, yeah.
His 4-4-2 is super dynamic. You know, you have Petritrone pulling the strings. They kind of take a tiki-taka approach. And then you have Maran's 4-4-2, which is more of a low block kind of thing.
Exactly.
And you'll remember it at Cagliari. Maran used to coach Cagliari
Of course.
So yeah, very interesting way of mirroring these formations as well.
I thought Catanzaro's goalkeeper had a very good showing over here, Fulignati.
Mm. Known for his distribution, by the way.
Yeah?
Yeah, long balls, apparently, can ping them.
He had 6 saves. He got a rating of 8.3 over here. Lezzarini also had a good showing with 5 saves, but none quite to the standard of the Catanzaro keeper. We shouldn't underrate how down and out Catanzaro were in this game.
Yeah.
They were always down, until after that goal in the 96th minute. I think the substitutions were quite good because they did have that new lease of life, especially, you know, Donnarumma got his name on the score sheet and he assisted the last goal. There was Brignola, who scored a super scissor kick as well. And I think, yeah, I don't know too much about these players, but they do seem like good players to bring off the bench.
Brignola is familiar to
me,
the name.
Yes, very familiar. He has a beard and like a fade. He's quite a short guy.
He was with Sampdoria.
He has that Hazard bodybuild, like Hazard. Like he's a bit short and stumpy.
Pear-shaped.
Yeah, slightly pear-shaped, yeah. Maybe.
Of course, we'll remember Alfredo Donnarumma from his time at Brescia in Serie A, and also Petritrone is a seasoned Serie A player. Petritrone was at Lecce, he was at Crotone, I believe, as well. Let's confirm that. Yes, he was at Crotone, Lecce, Benevento. He's played for quite a few teams. Yeah, he's quite a good midfielder, a very technical, good metronome to have.
Yeah, I think, again, Brescia, the team that finished eighth, gave it their all. I think stylistically, this was one of the teams that Catanzaro was going to struggle against because of the bad history. But Catanzaro advanced, and then they were facing Cremonese at the semifinals over two legs. What happened, bro, in the Palermo-Sampdoria game? I know that was quite interesting.
Yes, Palermo won this one 2-0 with two goals from the wing-back Diakite. Let's break down the formations first. So we have Palermo started off with, I'm going to butcher these as well, bro. Look at my first one.
Oh, God.
Desplanches in goal for Palermo in a 3-5-2 formation with Simon Graves Jensen paired up with Lucioni and Ceccaroni at the back. Diakite and Lunt on the wings, two pretty good wing backs. Roberto Insigne was playing in the middle. He is Lorenzo Insigne's brother, of course. Filippo Rannocchia was in the middle. You'll remember him from Monza. He scored a crazy free kick against Milan. And Jacopo Segre was in midfield as well alongside them. That's the midfield three. Segre is a long servant of Palermo. Soleri and Brunori were up front. And what can I say? More than double trouble, bro. Yeah. These guys are pretty, pretty good. You know, they're quite technical. They remind me, they have this like 90s aura striker vibe. You know, like Brunori will smash it, but he can also drop the shoulder. You know what I mean? Soleri too. They're quite tricky. They're fun to watch, these two. Stankovic was in goal for Sampdoria, of course.
There is a relation.
He's his son. Filip Stankovic's son. Now, Dejan Stankovic, the Inter legend, has three sons who are all involved in football. They all enlisted in the Inter Academy. One of them, Alexander, was a midfielder. I believe he's still active. The other one is Filip Stankovic. He's on loan at Sampdoria, exactly, the goalkeeper. And then the other one, has been out on loan a lot. What's his name? Where is he? Ah, no, the other one, I believe, retired. Retired at like 20.
Oh, shit.
I don't think he was any good.
fair enough.
Because, you know, enough. You get a spot with Inter's youth simply because you're Stankovic's son, and then that's kind of brutal.
Yeah. Stankovic is one of the Wesley Snyders that retired and just got fat. Like,
fantastic, yes. That is exactly how I would be, I think. Would you be like that?
I don't think I would. I think at that point you get addicted to feeling good, right? Yeah,
that's what I want.
That's the thing. Like I've been going to the gym for 6 months, and like I don't see myself fucking not being active anytime soon. You know.
The back three were Piccini, Gilardi, and Gonzalez. Not much we know about these guys. De Paoli was on the right. We know him from Serie A. With Giordano on the left, Matteo Ricci, and Gerard Yepes in the middle. Gerard Yepes is a crazy hybrid between Steven Gerrard and Mario Yepes, it seems.
100%.
Sebastiano Esposito plays behind the striker for Sampdoria. He is probably the best of the 1,000 Espositos that exist in this world, all owned by Inter, by the way. I think they have like a factory where they clone them because it's just ridiculous at this point. You know, I play this footy tic-tac-toe game on my phone, where it's so much fun, by the way. You can do Serie A only. Where, for example, I get, I'll have to pick a player who has featured for both Sampdoria and Inter. And I write Esposito, like, good luck.
Oh my
good
God.
Good luck, the amount of Esposito.
G Esposito, yeah. L Esposito, E Esposito. Yeah. They're like three like E Esposito.
Four S Espositos, yeah.
Yeah. De Paoli, obviously, you guys will definitely remember him from Sampdoria in Serie A, obviously where he is right now, but he was also loaned out to Verona, and he had stepped in a lot for
Faroni.
Faroni, when he was injured, he had stepped in a lot, bro, a lot.
Okay. Fabio Borini plays behind Manuel De Luca, the target man. And Fabio Borini, those of you who know Borini know what he brings. He will always bring you that fantastic work ethic. He'll never stop, like, you know, the grind. And he's got that random... He's a man of moments as well, where he shows moments of good finishing and good class.
I also hated how people shat on him when he was at Milan.
Hey, like, how much can you hate a man who's giving his all?
Literally.
Great atmosphere in Sicily here. The referee didn't use his whistle much. It was generally a very good game to watch. Solera looked lively. He had a narrow miss with an acrobatic volley and forced Stankovic into a great save through a header. Insigne was quite wasteful while Brescia had a penalty call, but it was quite soft. Diakite scored after Soleri played a ball that somehow fell for him perfectly through a crowded area after a cross by Soleri himself. It was a composed finish by Diakite, who took it like a striker, to be honest, on the volley.
I'm sorry, did you say Brescia?
Sorry, I meant Sampdoria, of course. Okay, Pirlo's so. Sampdoria, yes. Yeah. I don't know why I have Brescia written over here. Blonde moment. Pirlo, by the way, is the manager of Sampdoria. I feel like that's actually an interesting thing to point out.
And another interesting thing to point out is that Sampdoria were battling relegation for a lot of the season. Yeah. It looked like they were going to do a whole double drop, like a lot of these teams do.
Like the likes of Crotone did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Diakite scored again early on in the second half, getting on the end of Lund's delivery and guiding it in intelligently. Again, two very intelligent finishes by Diakite. He has an interesting celebration where he holds his hands in front of his face, kind of like, it's weird. I don't know, these hand celebrations are all strange. Let's be real, like everyone trying. Matthew, on his pro clubs, imitate your celebration, bro. God, every time he scores.
I can't even do it. It's this. I'm taking a photo of the moment.
Yeah, it's fucking... At first I was like, that's so lame, but now it's pretty gas.
It's gas.
If any of you want to play pro clubs with us, if any of you want to join our club, we've just started one, by the way.
Hit us up. It's called The Spotlight.
The Spotlight,
because,
yeah.
Spotlight didn't fit. And also,
we tried
to call it Spotheads, but it's offensive because of potheads.
Yeah,
it's offensive to a group of people.
Which we are offended by.
Yeah, I mean, we probably qualify.
Sampdoria went on to create three decent opportunities, but they couldn't capitalize. Brunori megged a player and missed a one-on-one at one point. It was bloody gorgeous. I wish he scored it. He's a prolific goal scorer who's in his prime. He's very dangerous in Serie B right now, and I'm wondering if maybe he could take that step. I believe he's like 29 years old as it stands. Yeah, Di Francesco scored a third, but it was deemed as offside. Yeah, and the Stankovic brother, who is retired, is Stefan Stankovic, and he's 23 and retired. Imagine that, guys. Yeah, so let's get into a little bit. First of all, this Salim Diakite, who was the hero on the day. He is a French player.
He's an interesting one, man. Not only the two goals, but he inserts himself quite a bit, and he's quite large. He's quite large, but he's zippy.
Yeah, he's 6'2", but he doesn't come across as a 6'2" player exactly because of how rapid he is. He kind of grew up playing in France, but also in Portugal. He played with Rio Ave as a youth player.
Portugal.
Yeah. He most recently, before Palermo, featured for Ternana, where he played 70 games and scored 4 goals only. Yeah. So it's crazy that he scored half the goals he scored at his entire time at Ternana in this playoff game. So talk about a man of big moments. A very interesting player is Eduardo Soleri, though, the striker. Dude, he's pretty, pretty gas as well. He's a Roma youth product. Nowadays, he's 26 years old. He's 6'4". He's got a great touch. He's played 43 games for Palermo, scoring 7 times. And he's been out on a few loans from Roma before eventually being sold to Padova and then to Palermo.
Wow.
Yeah, good player.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there isn't really much else I can say about this one. I think so.
Palermo. They showed the gap in quality. And correct me if I'm wrong, naturally. But even if you look at the average like heat map of the game, the average player positions, you will see that Palermo settled very high up the pitch, while Sampdoria were very compact. And trying to cover the middle of the pitch, trying to force them wide, trying to do this and that. I don't think they managed to do any of that.
The goals came at very good times for Palermo as well, because one came at the end of the first half and the other one right at the beginning. So then they just spent the rest of the second half defending. Literally, you look at the offensive heat map, like it's all Sampdoria, because they needed 3 goals to go through, because obviously Palermo finished above them in the table.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is Palermo through to the next round.
Yes, and that means that they will go up against Venezia. Yeah. So not fucking easy for them. Catanzaro, as you guys know, they faced Cremonese in the semi-finals over 2 legs. If you look at the previous 2 encounters, they were both nil-nils. So everyone was expecting these 2 games maybe to be a little bit more on the lax side, but that's not what happened at all. as Viverani's Catanzaro went up to face Stroppa's Cremonese. You all know Stroppa. It was very rainy again. Clearly, Catanzaro, if it even is a place, I don't know if it's a place, a region, whatever. I don't think I'll be going there anytime soon because this is like close to summer. You know what I mean? It's just always pissing down. So a very similar setup over here for Catanzaro as the one that they utilized in their previous match against Brescia. Fulignati once again in goal. This was, however, a 4-2-3-1 formation, but Oliveri right back, Brigenti and Antonini as the centre backs, with Scognamillo as the left back, Pontisso and Petriccione in the double pivot, with Van de Putte and Sunas out on the wings, with Biaschi playing behind Jamello. It was a 3-5-2 for Cremonese. And one thing I'm going to say before I even say the lineup of Cremonese is very similar to the team that we saw in Serie A 2 seasons ago. And also, to me, the best performers overall
in the playoffs. Yeah,
they played really well. They really showed that they are... They're going to be contenders again next season, 99%.
Dude, they have a lot of firepower. Like Saju, Chofani, and Koda.
Let me say their starting 11.
Catanzaro is a place, by the way, in Calabria.
In Calabria, yeah. Okay. fuck, I like Calabria. Yeah. I'll go to Catanzaro, fuck it. Saro in goal, and a backline of Antov, Ravenelli, and Bianchetti. Zanimacchi out on the right, Qualiata out on the left, and a midfield three of Vasquez, Castagnetti, and Piquel, with Chofani and Saju up front. Correct me if I'm wrong, but is that not the same team we saw in Serie A?
Honestly.
Which goes to show, now, they have some more funding behind them. They have the most financial power in Serie B, Cremonese. I know that Palermo have decent owners as well.
Como have these rich Indonesian tobacco company, exactly.
Bravo. I have some interesting facts about that company.
Yeah, interesting.
And just about Como in general. But Cremonese, clearly, they have a good fan base. It's a nice place, and they pay their players well. So they have a good little project going over here, and continuity is so important. A draw on aggregate would be enough for Cremonese. In the 14th minute, Cremonese opened the scoring through Tsaju, a player that Jake highlighted just before they got relegated, said, keep your eyes out for this guy.
I thought he would stay in Serie A, but probably the project is good enough to convince him to stay.
These are the years in Saju's career where he should get some experience in Serie B. Sorry, bro, I just noticed that I didn't switch the plug on, so my laptop isn't charging. Give me a sec.
No problem. First, I was afraid.
That could have been devastating. So Tsaju opened the scoring in the 14th. It was a deflected strike that hit the crossbar and fell to Tsaju, who tapped in. They made it 2 in the 50th minute as Chofani scored. It was a Zanimacchia cross to the near post, which was headed into the far corner brilliantly by Chofani. It was one of those where he leaps and heads it like that into the far corner.
He's like 40 years old.
Yeah,
he's an old man.
Literally. 1 minute later, because, you know, this game finished 2-2, it's 2-0 at the moment. 1 minute later, Catanzaro fight back, because Catanzaro are relentless, Catanzaro are southern, Catanzaro have grit, and boy oh boy, can they move the ball. When they start moving the ball, they would threaten most teams. The bottom 10 teams in Serie A have a tough time defending against this team when they start moving the ball. They're so fucking fluid, they're so dynamic. But over here, it was a curling effort into the top corner from the edge of the area by Chofani. A brilliant goal just 1 minute later. Sorry, 1 second. I think I made a mistake over here. No.
You said that he scored the towering header earlier.
That was for... Yeah, I made a mistake. I wrote that Chofani scored for Catanzaro. I'm not too sure. If you want to double check who scored that goal.
For Chofani, no, Brignola and Biaschi.
This one was Biaschi.
So he scored the towering header in Biaschi.
No, the towering header was scored by Chofani for Cremonese. Okay. And now from outside the box, it was Biaschi with a curling effort into the top.
Just a minute later.
From the edge of the air. No wonder. Just a minute later. In the 68th minute, and then Brignola, once again, off the bench, super sub over here. It was an Oliveri cross to the far post that was knocked down by Jamello to Brignola, who slotted it in. Catanzaro went on to search for the winner as Donnarumma was denied by a great 1v1 save by Saro and then later on also by the post. So again, guys, we're seeing Catanzaro's subs making an impact once again. Donnarumma almost scoring twice. Brignola coming off the bench and making an impact. So yeah, we are seeing a team that has a good project going on over here. One thing that I noticed, I couldn't help but notice, is Coda was benched. The 35-year-old Massimo Coda, who scored 16 goals in this campaign.
This is the thing with the playoffs. The games happen so in such a condensed time frame that you need to balance your team. And usually the teams with the greatest depth do well. Mm-hmm. Look how Cagliari operated in the playoffs. Look how they used Luvumbo. We always say that they bring him on late, but he was their secret weapon in the playoffs, and it was a massive thing because they would bring him on late, and every single game they had a gear shift. Right?
Exactly.
Palermo probably gave too much. I'll talk about it in my game now. Palermo gave too much in the first leg against Venezia and then had nothing to give in the second leg, for
example.
Yeah, so it's very important to try to take care of your players, and especially when you have three strikers like Cremonese have. In Coda, Tsaju, and bloody, what's his name? Coda, Tsaju, and Chofani, exactly. Yes,
and also, bro, Zanemakia and Qualiata are very involved. Pikel, Vasquez, and Castagnetti are also very good. They're honestly
a good team, man.
They have a very, very good team. Very good team.
I'm a big fan of Pikel. He plays for some African country, and he represents them.
Congo, the...
Maybe it's that's COD. Congo. Is that Congo?
Democratic.
Ah.
I think. Just
I'm going to have to confirm that. But yes, Pikel is a very strong midfielder. Pikel. I just Googled Pikel. You have no idea. Pikel. His first name, Charles. Charles Pikel.
Charles Pikel.
Born in Switzerland.
Okay.
Ah, yes, it is Congo, though.
It is
he represents Congo.
I thought so.
Very nice.
I thought so.
Okay.
Very good. One thing that we saw is the early control by Cremonese in this game, going in as the favourites. I mean, they very much stamped their authority early on with the goal, and they looked to control the game. They would be very disappointed to let Catanzaro get back into it. But that's what you get with Catanzaro, and then it's a consistent thing throughout the entire playoffs, right? A player I want to highlight is Oliveri from Catanzaro, who won 11 duels, and he was he got the pre-assist in one of the goals as well. Very, very well. He does a lot of dirty work, and he's constantly running up and down.
The fullback, right?
Yeah, the fullback.
Yeah, 21 years old only, Italian.
21-year-old Italian.
So we might be seeing a new trend.
Look at his fucking
heat map.
That's crazy. He's crazy.
Yeah, this might be a new trend. Now we've got quite a few good young fullbacks coming
that's
up in
true,
Italy.
That's true. Cambiaso, yeah. Bellanova, Oliveri.
I believe not one of the Fiorentina, not Caiode.
Caiode. Yeah, he is. 19-year-old Italian.
Exactly. Super. So quite a few amazing fullbacks coming up, to be honest.
I think that after Catanzaro equalized, they had the opportunity, obviously, to find a winner over there, and they were quite unfortunate not to find the winner. They had the backing of their fans on another rainy night. They made the substitutions. They had 7 big chances in this game, 58% ball possession, 16 shots, and their keeper didn't make a single save in this game. Saro made an excellent save on Donnarumma towards the end. They go off to the second leg, where the clear advantage here is with Cremonese, as all they needed was a draw in order to advance. The lineups changed a little bit over here. So previously we saw the 4-2-3-1 up against the 3-5-2. And now Cremonese adapted to a 3-5-1-1 rather, up against a 4-4-2. So slight changes from both sides, with very, very different missions in their mind. In the opening stages of the match, Fulignati pulled off a mental save onto the post to deny a Castagnetti free kick, because Castagnetti is the guy
for
Cremonese when it comes to dead ball situations. In the 12th minute, this game ended 4-1 to Cremonese, and it was absolute destruction. There was no debate. So the sun was shining. It was a bit of a nicer day over here. One thing we saw is a higher press by Cremonese midfielders and forwards, really disrupting Catanzaro's play from the back. So they're like, where did we struggle in the last game? We were letting them play out the back. So this time, we're going to disrupt them. And Koda started this game with Vasquez right behind him. And Koda was at 35 years old, pressing. And Pickel and Bonaiuto, particularly, were really pressing forward as Castagnetti was dropping back, just being that anchor in the midfield. So Vasquez opened the scoring in the 12th minute. The Trequartista curled the ball into the top corner from a central position outside the area. This is what I love when you need a goal. From early on in the game, you're having chrachs, and you're having chrachs, and you're having chrachs.
Of course, bro.
Because a lot of teams overcomplicate things. Milan do this a lot, where they need to get into the box, and into the box, and into the box. Yeah. No, you get a sight at goal, and you go for it. And that, if you get it in from the 12th minute, it's such a mental advantage, especially when you're at home. In fact, 7 minutes later, they made it too, through Bonaiuto.
Good help.
Good help. Castagnetti's ball over the top was struck on a first time volley slash scissor kick by Bonaiuto into the back of the net. It was mishit and it kind of looped, but it worked. It fucking worked. And you know what? Have a crack.
Have a crack. For those of you who don't know what that is, by the way, that's Scouts for have a crack, which means shoot.
Shoot.
Yes. Have a crack. Come on, have a crack.
That doesn't mean that Catanzaro were down and out as they hit the crossbar, guys. Van de Putte's shot hit the crossbar. However, in the 37th minute in the first half, Cremonese had already made it 3-0 through Massimo Coda. It's the cherry on top of the cake over there by Coda. As Catanzaro lost possession in a dangerous area and Cremonese played with them a little bit before scoring. The keeper came out. There was a player on the line. They pass it there, get the player out of position, square it again. The keeper scrambling everywhere.
He's taking the piss at that point.
Yeah, Antov was really smart in this move. And Antov is another player that we've seen around.
I believe Antov was at Bologna as a youth player and was quite...
Uncle Antov was with Bologna.
Uncle Antov was with Bologna, yes. We have an uncle called Anton for those, obviously, who don't get the joke. No one got the joke.
maybe our moms.
Antov, I believe he was at Bologna. And if it's the same Antov... I remember he wasn't that good at Bologna. He was quite young. Is it Valentin Antov? Yes, it is. It is. It is Valentin, and he was at Bologna.
Bro just expects me to know the first names.
Valentin. Yeah, he's Bulgarian. He was at Bologna in 2021, where he played 5 games and was, of course, moved on because he didn't quite prove to be up to standard. But you said he's improved, right?
Yeah, well he played a good part in this move. Okay. He toyed with them a little bit. I'm not too sure how he did overall.
Yeah, this season. We're not going to lie and say we've watched all of the Serie A this season. Serie A takes enough of our time.
Yes. Watch the playoffs and you know, there are other leagues which I like to dabble in sometimes as well. In the 63rd minute, Brignola, I'm quite sure it's Brignola, he got sent off for a dissent. So this is the super sub that did so well in the last 2 games. Rush of blood to the head and he got sent off. And after that, you know that there's absolutely no way Catanzaro are going to get back into it. In fact, in the 69th minute, San Nicola made it. Wait, did he? Oh, I made so many mistakes in my notes. But was another excellent goal. As Meyer beat the defender by knocking the ball around him and delivering a low cross to Ser Nicola, who finished cleanly. Yes, it was Ser Nicola that scored.
You gotta believe in yourself.
And then in the 80th minute, Antonini scored a half volley from just outside the area just to get one back for Catanzaro. And Cremonese well deserved that they went through to the final. And to be honest, after seeing this game, I didn't think that whoever was gonna go through from Venezia and Palermo would have any chance up against Cremonese in the final because they looked so good.
Yeah.
It was sad to see Catanzaro out because they play such a different brand of football with their fucking vertical tiki-taka and their runs off the ball. Create so many players creating pockets of space with their runs, but they were just overpowered by quantity, quality and class over here.
Yeah, absolutely, bro. And it's a shame that their manager will most likely be moving on. I know, as it stands at the time of recording, Venezia are considering bringing him in. He's not the only option. They're also considering Di Francesco.
Mm.
So we'll see what they do.
I feel like Venezia have a good thing going, bro, with their guy.
He's gone, though.
With Vivarini.
He's gone. Yes. So Venezia, Their manager, I believe, will most likely be at Torino. It's not been totally confirmed, but most likely he'll be there. These are just, you know, rumors as it stands. Yeah,
we don't talk about
rumors. Yeah, because that's just gossip, you know.
Is it Vivarini? What's his name?
No, again? His name is.
So Vivarini is a different one.
Yeah. One second. Let me find
Vanoli.
Vanoli. Yes.
You see Paolo where Vanoli. I got confused there. He's really cool. He looks like the guy that was the head engineer of Ferrari. What's his name? I forgot. But
he had a really wholesome celebration towards the end. Bro. He was running around with the fans,
and like, he was cowered throughout the entire.
Yeah, he was composed.
He was really composed. Cowered is he was composed, whatever. but then when they actually went through, he reminded me personality wise of the Argentina manager. He had no reaction until day one,
and then he just started crying immediately.
Exactly,
like, and De Rossi as well. De Rossi is very much like that. He stays composed, and at the very end, he explodes in emotion. Mm-hmm. That's lovely to
Mourinho's
see.
Mourinho's the CEO of that, and Mourinho's the CEO of telling his players not to celebrate.
Like he'll get angry at the celebrations. Like, oh,
bro, there was one. Who's the young centre back who was on loan from Juve to Roma? Go to Frosinone. Huijsen.
My God, I'm out of practice.
Huh? He put his hands up and then instantly put his hands back down. He was coming on as a sub, and Mourinho looked at him like, "Stop, man." He put his hands up and instantly put them back down, man. Relax.
He's right. It ain't over till the fat lady sings. That was a setup. You're not going to volley it home?
I'm not going to volley it home. I'm not. What, you want to say something about Mourinho's wife or something? Bro, I'm not going to. Mourinho has contacts, bro.
You're right. And he doesn't do podcasts already. Well, he started, actually.
He started a little bit. He started. But now he won't be doing any since he has the Fenerbahce job, because the Fenerbahce fans will murder him.
Absolutely. Oh, it's a vibe. He was at the basketball game recently. Have you seen his story in Turkey? They're just different, man. What a vibe.
Like, I love the Turkish league. I'm going to take that back. I think the Turkish league is definitely up there with the most passionate leagues in the world. It boils over though so much. It's a place where fans storm the pitch, precedents storm the pitch to take a swing at the referee. These aren't things that you should be doing in the 21st century.
Well, it depends where you are in the world.
Some places you can get away with it. They beat
in the top five leagues, you can't do
they
it.
They beat
no.
the shit out of the ref, bro. Like,
yeah,
what
no,
he, you see Mourinho addressing the Fenerbahce fans, and he's like a world leader that's about to start a fucking movement, bro. They're all losing their mind. You could see Mourinho just on the verge of, football is passion. There is no, your shirt is my skin.
That's hilarious. That's what he says, bro.
Football is passion, and there is no other place, no better place to feel the passion. And then they start going mental. He grabs the scarf and he starts fucking waving.
Oh my God, I haven't seen
it.
You have to show me.
It's crazy. It's crazy, bro.
I saw him saying, I will not be considering any players from AS Roma.
No shit, bro. Why, Mourinho?
Yeah. So Palermo had the tough task of taking on Venezia. The first leg was, of course, in Sicily, in Palermo's home. Let me go through the lineups, of course. We'll start with Palermo's. Of course, Desplanches was in goal in a 5-3-2 formation. Diakite and Lunt as the fullbacks again. Graves, Jensen, Lucioni and Marconi this time. Segre, Gomez and Ranocchia in the middle with Soleri and Brunori up front. Notice how it's the same guys.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do this. And in fact, they looked exhausted by the third game.
Yeah,
and that's when they went out. For Venezia, it was Jorinen in goal, who we all know.
Jorinen, I believe.
Jorinen,
I think.
Excuse me.
I think.
Zverko, Svoboda, and Itzes as the back three.
Svoboda.
With
the anchor, the last man.
Anderson and Tesman in the middle as the double pivot it was kind of like a 3-2-4-1 formation.
Yes, bro.
How
that's exactly what it was.
Yeah. Bjarkson was on the left wing, or Bjarkison rather. Candela was on the right wing, which is he's a pretty good player, Candela. Mm-hmm. Pierini and Buzio playing behind Poyan Palo.
I really like Pierini and Buzio.
Honestly,
I really
bro,
like Tessman as well.
This team
Poyan
is really
Palo, I don't need to say another time how much I love him.
Venezia play long balls, and it's almost like their entire game plan is based on
giving
pressing
the ball away, bro.
On pressing the ball away. When they like lose the ball. They lose
exactly.
possession, they press immediately,
exactly.
and they win it. That's how they
you
create
see,
most
you
of their chances.
You see their centre-backs hoofing it forward. They don't really have passages of play. But it makes sense when you look at their lineup, because their entire defensive philosophy when they're off the ball is pressure the guys onto the wings. Pressure the guys onto the wings, create space in the middle, increase the press when you force them wide, and then they move the ball down to the middle and they just attack forward and forward. So it completely makes sense that they've got four players just absolutely
crowding
the
middle. Yeah.
And Buzio and Tessman in particular, they're up and down so much in that midfield. Particularly Buzio, he's so important.
He's a pressing machine. Oh,
yes.
The Americans are doing really well
here. Man.
Buzio
yes.
and Tessman. So yes, the first half saw quite a bit of action. Diakite forced Jorinen into a fingertip save, and Lucioni's towering header went just wide. Palermo came out strong, but Venezia grew into it and took over with more dangerous chances. Pierini scored a rocket with his left foot and celebrated while the announcer went off. The scenes were hilarious. This Palermo, like the groans when he scored, and this Palermo announcer is just talking. I didn't pick up what was being said, but the vibes were like negative. Yeah,
Black Skoda S Z Y 143. Please move your car from the from outside of the parking zone, please.
Mr. Skamaka, please leave the parking lot immediately, Mr. Skamaka.
We have CCTV.
So yeah, and Pierini's goal was gorgeous in this game. Gorgeous. And then, of course, after they scored, panic for Palermo, because Palermo need they can't lose at home, because winning in Venice is going to be tough.
Exactly.
And Venezia actually finished above them. So yeah, Ranocchia had a free kick, and it was the worst one I've ever seen in my life. But then against Milan, for Monza, top bins, well,
of course.
And
obviously,
it was
obviously
impossible, the angle.
Venezia scored
again, but it was ruled out for offside. And then I noticed that the Palermo manager has a Gen Z haircut, and it's bloody hilarious. You know, just the haircut.
He has a fade on the sides and long on top.
Bro, of everyone at sixth form in Malta.
Everyone on Love Island Malta.
Everyone on Love Island
that's
Malta.
That's fucking hilarious.
Honestly, that's so fucking
that's
funny, man.
That's so good. Yeah. Like, remember Def House in Malta? It was that house of male models. Like, it was like
I don't remember that. Clubhouse, I remember.
Clubhouse
was
of the girls. Def House was of the guys. He's part of Def House.
Okay. The player I'm going to highlight, of course, is the goal scorer, Nicolas Pierini, 25
years old. I like him a lot, bro.
He gives me Aramu vibes, man.
I know what you mean, bro.
You know?
I know what you mean.
His build, his frame, everything, like even the way he plays. 5'9", 25 years old, started his career at Sassuolo, actually, where he only played three games before being loaned out to Spezia, Cosenza, Ascoli, and Modena before moving to Cesena. And now, of course, as of 2022, featuring for Venezia, where he's played 59 times and scored 9 goals, excluding the playoff goals.
Mm.
So this would have been his
10th. He fits very well into the system.
He does. I'm excited to see him in Serie A, of course. And then we went on to the second leg, where Palermo just showed up exhausted. Notice the lineup once again, the injuries, like every player has a cross next to his bloody
you can't
name.
Do that, bro. But not everyone's blessed like Catanzaro, Venezia and Cremonese with such a deep squad, right?
Absolutely. They did rest one player, it's their goalkeeper. They played Pigliacelli in goal in their 3-4-2-1 formation, with Marconi, Lucioni and Graves Jensen at the back. Di Mariano this time started out on the left, with Diakite starting on the right again, with Segre and Ranocchia in the middle, Brunori and Insigne playing behind Soleri. So there was a little bit of rotation, but
tweaking.
Definitely was not enough. Meanwhile, Venezia, who didn't have the hassle of playing a quarter-final game as well, so this was only their second game.
Absolutely, that's a massive
Palermo's third. Massive aid. These guys are fighting for their lives.
Mm-hmm. They're getting massages, like, man.
Yeah. Or blowjobs. Jorinen was in goal for for Venezia with Idzes, Svoboda and Zverko at the back again, Candela and Zampano on the wings with Lella, who I love.
I really like Lella.
Highly technical player.
I really like Lella.
Yeah.
Who does he remind me of, man? To... Not Ilicic, but you know what I mean.
Get what I mean. Yeah, the long legs, the stride, but not nowhere near, obviously. But honestly, Shade. Lella, Tesman and Buzio in the middle with Poyampalo and Pierini starting up front. So Venezia had a very aggressive start and they capitalized on their early momentum by pressing high and attacking immediately. They disrupted Palermo's game plan and scored early through Tesman. And the goal set pretty much set the tone for the rest of the game, putting Palermo on the back foot. They controlled the game. The midfielders maintained possession. They circulated the ball efficiently and applied pressure. They prevented Palermo from establishing any rhythm by just pressing, bro. Press every time.
That's how they play, man. They're more dangerous when they're out of position. Out of possession.
Absolutely. And Tesman's goal from outside of the box was a great example of how much pressure they were piling up, by the way. Because the ability to just win the ball back and have a crack from there. Buzio did really well as well in that goal. Venezia utilized their flanks effectively. The second goal highlighted this. Lella's through ball to Zampano, who then set up Candela with an easy finish. This play demonstrated, of course, Venezia's ability to stretch Palermo. Just stretch them as well. They broke. They stood no chance. From the second this game started, it was over.
I was a bit disappointed
with this one because Palermo are better than this. You know, it's just the fact that they were so tired, it's almost unfair. Yeah. And these guys are just pressing them to oblivion. Like, Jarnin made good saves when called upon, but I don't think Venezia were really bothered at any point. Sorry, I have to turn that off.
You do. But in the last episode, I don't think it got picked up.
That's great. Then this one, it definitely was. Yeah,
you're gonna get a noise complaint, I think, from that, bro. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Palermo managed a late goal through Chaka Traore on loan from Milan, but it was not enough to stop Venezia from advancing. The player we're going to be highlighting here, we're going to highlight two players: Tanner Tesman, the American from Alabama, United States, 6'3". He started his career with Dallas, then moved to North Texas, then went back to Dallas, and now he's playing in Venice. Can you believe that? From Dallas to Venice. Dude.
Oh, what a story.
89 games, 9 goals, and this is excluding the playoffs.
So you're telling me they have a player like Chaka Traore on the bench that scored 2 for Milan last season, and they didn't utilize him that much?
Apparently so, man. Apparently so. It's wild, huh?
Mignani and his Gen Z haircut. They have Liam Henderson on the bench.
Oh, wow.
Empoli.
Yeah.
The CEO shooting from half pitch.
Yeah. He loves it. He loves to catch the goalkeeper off his line.
Mm-hmm.
Candela, have I highlighted Candela? I think I have.
You mentioned him.
Yes, okay. He is 6'1", again, 24 years old. These are all interesting talents. Mm. We'll be seeing them in Serie A. Of course, these guys next season, but even some of the other ones we mentioned that we picked out, I think they'll be there in the next 3 seasons for sure.
You know who's living the life in Venice, bro?
Mm.
Denis Cheryshev. Denis Cheryshev played for Real.
Yeah.
He chilled on the bench so hard in Madrid. And everyone's like, okay, next season is going to be Cheryshev's season. The first time Cheryshev had played in ages, he had accumulated yellow cards in La Liga when coming on, because he would like help Real hold up play when they need to maintain a win and just to get minutes. And I think he either had accumulated yellow cards or he had gotten a red card somewhere. But they played him in a game, Real, in like the round of 32 of the Copa del Rey. And they started Cheryshev, and the fans that they were against, I forgot who they were against, did some research, found out that Cheryshev shouldn't have been on the pitch, that he was banned, and they started chanting, "Cheryshev can't play. Cheryshev can't play." And upon further investigation, they noticed, yo, Cheryshev shouldn't have been on the pitch.
Walk over.
Real lost 3-0.
Oh my god.
Because of the walkover.
3 Cheryshev on goals.
Literally.
That's amazing.
And now he's in Venice. He never plays, bro. He never plays. He's just chilling on the bench.
We should try that at every game we go to.
Hey, bro.
Like,
hey.
Every time we go to like watch Milan.
Barella can't play.
That's amazing. Shall I do the first leg of the final and you do the second?
enjoy doing the first leg of the
final. Ah, it was a 0-0. It was a bit of a snooze fest. Of course, that's what we expect. Cremonese against Venezia. I think Venezia would have been very happy with the draw over here. Cremonese tried their best to try to best Venezia and get something out of it. But of course, they did not manage. They lined up in the first leg with Saro in goal. This is Cremonese, of course.
Yeah.
Antov, Ravanelli and Bianchetti at the back with Zani Macchia and Ser Nicola on the wings. Colo Colo in midfield with Castagnetti and Bonaiuto. And Vasquez playing behind the formidable Massimo Coda. For Venezia, it was Jorinen in goal.
Mirrored to perfection.
He's amazing.
Mirrored.
Look at that. Wow. It looks like a weight, a dumbbell.
Literally, it's like... It's literally. I was going to say it looks like two jet fighters going head to head. Yours is better.
Mine's better for you. You've become a bit of a gym douche at the middle as of late. So Jorinen was in goal with Zverko, Svoboda and Itzes at the back. Bjarkesen on the left, Candela on the right. Lella, Tesman and Buzio in the middle with Pierini playing behind.
Poyan Paolo.
Yes. So, cautious, a very cautious game. There was an early incident where the match was halted because of a smoke bomb thrown on the pitch. This is what we love.
Yes.
It caused a 2-minute delay. Cremonese started strong. They dominated possession, but they struggled to create clear-cut chances. Koda forced a save from Jorinen with a powerful shot from a distance. It almost seemed like...
In the 29th minute.
It almost seems like that's the only way they could have created chances, man, just shooting from a distance. Bonaiuta had multiple shots on target, but Jorinen handled them comfortably. Pierini's curling free kick hit the crossbar for Venezia, and it's the closest they came to scoring in the first half. In the second half, they started off cautiously again. Vasquez's shot was blocked. Zanemakia's follow-up was saved by Jorinen. Paolo and Buzio were substituted for Gitkier and Anderson. Koda's shot was saved by Jorinen again, who deflected for a corner. This was a bit better by Koda. It was quite a strong shot. Another crucial save from Jorinen, who was man of the match this game by far.
This was the biggest chance of the game. Svoboda made a hash of things at the back and gave the ball away to Zanemakia. Only for his low and powerful strike to be superb. He got down well, really strong forearm. That was, I think, the only clear cut inside the box, good shot opportunity. All fucking game.
Yeah. That's why I really don't like two-legged finals, man.
Not at all.
But whatever. The first leg usually goes like this. After 4 minutes of added time, the match ended 0-0, leaving everything to play for in the second leg.
I think the main takeaway, like from this one in particular, was both teams were so cautious. I think Cremonese were way too cautious for their own good, because you have the home advantage, and it's so important that you capitalize off having the home advantage in a two-legged cup final.
Yeah.
I think there was a low block from both teams where they both focused on covering the passing lanes without significant press on the ball carrier, hence the increase in long-range strikes. So we saw 18 shots by Cremonese and 12 shots by Venezia. That's because the guy on the ball was given so much space and they could just have cracks from distance. Because in a game that lacked chances, you don't typically see 40 shots being taken combined. There were 11 saves by Jorinen. Like, sure, you said Jorinen was man of the match. He had one good save, in my opinion.
Yeah, the others were quite easy.
Right at him. A guy I want to highlight is Ravanelli for Cremonese. He won 6 aerial duels, 3 ground duels, 3 interceptions, 2 tackles, 1 block, 4 clearances, and was never dribbled
past. Who was this?
Ravanelli,
damn, what a bloody performance.
Let me have a look at Ravanelli. I'll give you guys some stats. Ravanelli.
Sounds like a type of pasta.
It does sound like a type of pasta. He's my age. Born in 1997, 27 years old. Who's he played for before? He was born in Trento, guys.
Nice.
Accept and continue. Okay. He played for Sassuolo. He played for Frosinone.
I don't remember this guy. Hey. At Sassuolo, Ravanelli.
Padova. So he started off at Sassuolo. He came up through the ranks at Mezza Corona. He played at Parma's youth team. And then moved to Sassuolo's youth team, played for Sassuolo, went to Cremonese, so probably on loan at Cremonese, went back to Sassuolo, was loaned out again to Cremonese, spent time at Frosinone. So he was then purchased by Cremonese, went on loan to Frosinone, and then rejoined Cremonese.
Wicked.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So not a very luxurious career over here, but he had a really good showing in this game. Really yeah. good showing.
Over to you for the second leg.
Let's do that. So when it comes to the lineups, once again, mirrored to perfection, but they both went for a 3-5-2. Yeah. Not many changes. You could see Gitkier this time started alongside Poyanpalo up front, whereas Bonaiuto started up front alongside Saju for Cremonese. So both opting for, you know, two direct strikers. Now, with a 0-0 draw, Venezia held the upper hand for the return leg, needing only a draw to secure promotion due to their higher regular season finish. However, the only goal of the game came by Venezia through Gitkier. It was a trademark Venezia goal. Great hold-up play by Poyanpalo before playing through the charging Buzio. Buzio always charging forward off the ball like a fucking animal. Square ball by Buzio to Gitkier, who slotted in. The ball was almost cleared off the line. Perhaps Bjarksen was in a more free position, to be honest. I would have been pissed if I was Bjarksen, because Gitkier should have totally passed to him.
Yeah.
But this was our commentary intro piece this episode. So
And the cover art.
Buzio pulled off injured in the 59th minute and was replaced by Lella. Now, as much as we like Lella, he does not have the same industry as Buzio. Yeah, so that was a massive hit for Venezia. Saro pulled off an excellent save to deny a Bjarksen header following a Zampano cross. Piquel got booked in the 84th minute for trying to lift Svoboda off the ground from his shirt following a perfect last-ditch tackle by Svoboda. So he literally
he had
just
a really
got
good game,
pissed off.
Svoboda.
A very good game. Very good game. Very good game. Of the men of the match.
And Tessman is always so impressive.
Hey, man. And
Tanner.
Bjarksen is very versatile because we saw him playing at left wing back at some point as well. And here he played left midfield.
It's true. His full name is Bjarkistein Bjarkesson.
No way.
Bjarkistein Bjarkesson.
No way.
From Iceland, of course. 24 years old. Huh?
Bjarkistein Bjarkesson. We saw excellent defensive work and tempo management by Venezia throughout this game. Again, I still am of the opinion that Cremonese were the best team in the entirety of the playoffs.
I think Venezia were the grindiest team. You know,
exactly.
The team that just got on the pitch and just grinded and pressed.
I think
and
Cremonese will be so upset that they didn't manage to get promotion.
I think it's inevitable though for them next season. I think they'll go up.
It could be.
But Avoglia, some teams that have gone down are pretty strong as well. So yeah,
Sassuolo.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they'll bounce back up soon. It depends. Salernitana might.
Mm-hmm. Frosinone, it's interesting because like, who do they have? I don't know who they have. Like,
that's the thing about Frosinone, right? Like, that's the reason why we, us at Serie A Spotlight, are not too bothered by Frosinone going down. Because like next season, I can't even name three players who will be in
the starting.
So
that's probably off to the Prem because everyone in the Prem is
they don't own them.
Exactly.
Yeah, so they don't own their team. Yeah.
So that was Venezia going through and the scenes were just immaculate, man. And you know what, bro? Let's fucking go watch Venezia.
Yes,
to get a
man,
gondola
oh.
to the stadium. Let's get the girls. Did they love Venice? They'd get a gondola with them, bro. Eat spaghetti and do all this. It'll be amazing, bro. Sex and football. Oh, look at me. I'm Cassano. Sex, football, food. Perfect. I knew this waiter, man.
Cassano. We discussed this in yesterday's episode with Anthony Locascio. Locascio. Cassano used to know a waiter. He would give the waiter women and the waiter would give him pastries. That was their exchange. Like, can you imagine? It was like, sex and, what would he say? Sex and food.
The perfect combination. All right, sounds like me lying when I was 14.
He spent the latter part of his career over with.
Shall we start? Because now, basically, guys, what we're going to do is we're going to move on to the three newly promoted teams and break them down. I think it only makes sense to start with Venezia.
Yes.
Venezia are the fourth youngest team in Serie B, 25.4 years on average. Their style of play is very... So, in a weird way, it's possession-based, right? In a very strange way, it's possession-based. But they do not mind giving the ball away at all, because when they give the ball away, that's when they have a very high and organized press.
Mm-hmm.
They started off the season playing a 4 at the back formation. However, throughout the season, they shifted to a 3 at the back throughout the campaign. And I do believe, I am of the opinion that this happened. I have a note over here that they seem to have a weakness where they were vulnerable to counterattacks due to their high press. So an additional center back, essentially putting it as plainly and simply as possible, is what they needed. So with the high press and the involvement of both fullbacks in attacks, Venezia are often left to defend with two center backs and a defensive midfielder, thus often being outnumbered. So it was a very smart decision, in my opinion, to opt for the 3-5-2 formation.
Yeah, they like to play out from the back at times, with midfielders dropping deep. But at every single opportunity, it feels they try to play a long ball to Paolo, who's very good in the air. The idea of that is that if Paolo fails to take it down, that's part of their system, that they will literally press the man who recovers the ball, forcing them into an error most of the time, and capitalizing of that. You see their goals scored this season, many of them are like that, dispossessing a defender.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you see, when it comes to their press, they press aggressively and they press in numbers after giving the ball away.
Mm-hmm.
Buzio and Tessman are the two central midfielders responsible for most of the press. And part of their role is to press them wide. And they do that simply by pressing forward, both of them, and blocking the passage of play into the middle, the passing lane into the middle of the pitch to the main creator of the opponents, which is typically the regista, forcing them wide.
And then running into space as well.
Zampano, Candela, or whoever is playing in the wing-back roles, just fucking press aggressively. And they are supported by Buzio and Tessman.
Yeah.
So whoever, whatever side it's on, they double mark them and they take the ball off them over there.
Absolutely.
Just some notes on Vanoli, because we're seeing all this interest around Vanoli, right? Torino, apparently. That would have been way more possible had Juric actually gone to Hajduk Split. But that fell apart, as you pointed out in yesterday's episode. Not to take credit for that, because I literally got it from you.
Yeah, and Nikola Kalinic, the sporting director of Hajduk Split. They've signed Gattuso.
Yes, great. Yeah. If it's that. Vanoli was Conte's assistant manager at Italy, at Chelsea, and he was the technical coach at Inter. In his first coaching role with Spartak Moscow in 2021-2022, he guided them to victory in the Russian Cup. So he learned his 3-5-2 from Conte for sure.
Yeah.
He definitely got that from Conte.
Especially the forcing play wide kind of thing, compacting the middle, and the big defenders.
Wherever he's going, Ashley Young is coming with him.
Yeah.
And Victor Moses.
Absolutely. I am a fan of Venezia's style. It's quite unorthodox, isn't it?
It is unorthodox. My question is not my question. This is my statement. It's not sustainable.
In Serie A.
That's the thing. In Serie A, it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
Because giving up possession that much is not sustainable.
However, they do sometimes, depending on who they're playing against, they sometimes opt for a mid-block instead of that high kind of pressing.
Yes.
I think we'll be seeing more of that in Serie A. To be honest with you, we will most likely be seeing an entire new system because there's a new manager, right?
Absolutely.
This is just what got them there. And yeah, very, very good season by Paolo Vanoli, the Conte understudy.
Yeah. Just one more point about Vanoli. He was a left back / left midfielder.
Back in his day.
While at Parma, Vanoli won both the UEFA Cup and the Coppa Italia in 1999. And then in 2001, won the Coppa Italia again with Fiorentina, this time beating his former Parma in the final. And Vanoli scored in all these three finals that he played in.
That's wild. I had no idea.
Yes,
he must have gone mental.
Yes.
Imagine the way he celebrated this. Yeah. Nice. It's and always... Sometimes you just have that winning instinct, that mentality in you, right?
Yeah. Not to mention, because we could talk about the system all we want, when it comes to the personnel, they have the best striker in Serie B by a landslide. Poyan Palo is an absolute beast. He is a man of the people as well. He famously, after winning some game...
After scoring four goals,
yeah. jumped into the stands and had a beer had with a the beer, supporters. Yeah. He's the fucking man.
Legend.
And I think that's all. That's all there is. They also have Yayalo on the bench.
Remember
Yayalo from Udinese?
Yeah, I remember him very clearly. He was pretty mid.
Yeah.
You know, nothing special.
Nothing special at all. Altare, Giorgio Altare.
Wow.
But very excited to see them. And, guys, their kits every season... When you think they can't make a nicer kit, they always deliver, make a nicer one. My favorite kit in the world is one they have right now, which is like, it's white and a very light gray stripes with red shorts. And it's and just a slightly red color. It's the one we have on our...
That's amazing on the pro clubs, the listener, is going to join.
Yes. Brilliant. Shall we jump to... Como?
Como, let's go, bro. So
Como, interesting. Very Como, interesting team as well.
Like, Ossian Roberts, Cesc Fabregas, who is it? We don't really know. I think it's a combination of the
who
two.
Who is this?
Right?
Oh, Ossian Roberts. Yeah. Who am I? Cesc Fabregas. Yeah, that's kind apparently of like what it is.
How in Sopranos you had Junior, Uncle Junior, as the mob boss in the eyes of the police, but everyone knew it was Tony Soprano,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
Everyone knew, and that's Cesc Fabregas. Of course, Cesc Fabregas is Tony Soprano in this system. So, Como, full name Como 1907.
Yes.
They play a 3-4-2-1. They started initially, and then they shifted to a 4-2-3-1 to better utilize their wingers and improve their
slash a 4-4-2 as well. They like they Very enjoy dynamic. A 4-4-2.
Yeah. They usually like once against them Cremonese, especially they were really struggling against the high press, and that's what eventually did change their formation.
Exactly.
And they
exactly.
Kept it. The issues that they faced included the low positioning of the wing backs and the double pivots not being deep enough to create space for key players, basically. Yeah. Como attempt to counteract pressing by utilizing quick ball shifts to underloaded sides, but inconsistently, so they don't always go for that approach. They move the ball around very well. Their 4-4-2 allows basically a bunch of triangles and diamonds everywhere along the pitch. You know, they also go for this like kind of like not a tiki-taka approach, but it is kind of a pass and move.
So they do a pass and move, and it's almost like they're constantly creating space for their attacking midfielders. Their entire goal in their system is to get the ball to their attacking midfielders. Two very good case studies for this are Simone Verdi and Lucas Da Cunha.
Barnaby.
Verdi and Da Cunha in particular. But then they also have the likes of Gabriel Loni, Strefezza as well, who's in their team. Those are the main culprits. But a lot of their play depends on getting the ball to those. And then they have the utilization of a box midfield shape during the build-up to outnumber the opposition's second line of pressing. So they're constantly forming those box shapes. You said diamond, shifts like between a diamond and a box. And what they do is they overload the middle in order to get that numerical advantage and play these short pass and move movements. It's like they always have an option to pass it to.
Absolutely. They actually started the season with a different manager, by the way, with Moreno Longo. He played 13 games, he had 4 losses, and he was sacked. And that's when Ossian Roberts and Cesc Fabregas were brought in. I'm not sure if Cesc was there already or not, but that's when Ossian Roberts was brought in, recommended by Thierry Henry. Fabregas actually led, he managed the team for 5 games, without Osian being there. Okay. He got a permit, I believe, some kind of special permission because he doesn't have his license. So he got a special permission from the board to kind of go for it anyway, to coach anyway. Their strength this season, comma, was tactical adaptability.
Yeah.
They changed up so many times, man.
And I think that is the strength of this management team. When you look at Fabregas, he, in my opinion, is going to be one of these next big fucking progressive managers. When you think of those groundbreaking young managers, the Guardiolas, the Zidanes, the Mottas, I'm going to toss him in there as well. Fabregas is going to be one of the Xabi Alonso. Fabregas is going to be one of those once, obviously, he gets all of his qualifications.
Yeah, because I can't believe that. That so must funny. Be like... outdated, right?
He's one of the shareholders of the club. Do you know that?
I know he, even him, Henri, and some other big dude.
So, let me break this down, because it's interesting. I think it's even more interesting than how they play football. So, I think we've explained how they play football. Now we'll reference some of their players after I explain this. So, their owners are the Hartano brothers. They own this group called the Jarum Group, who are Indonesian billionaires. They have a tobacco company, central banks, and they're also involved in the cricket, which is one of the highest grossing sports in the world, the cricket. In the 2016-2017 season, they had financial problems, that led to the club going out of business and being auctioned off. On the fourth try, Akosua Puni Essien, wife of footballer Michael Essien, bought the club for like 250k, becoming the first foreign businesswoman in Italian football. However, the Italian Football Federation didn't let her club join Serie C for the 2017-2018 season because it didn't meet all their rules, to put it very fucking basically.
Okay.
Instead, a new company, Como 1907, was allowed to play in Serie D. Since then, the club has been owned by the Indonesian company Jarum Group. Now, as of 2023/2024, Dennis Wise, a former Chelsea and Millwall player, is an advisor on the board. Football legends Thierry Henry and Cesc Fabregas also have some shares in the club. Initially, Como 1907 was supposed to be the base for the Garuda Select project, but due to league rule changes, the project moved to England under Dennis Wise's direction. So this is pretty much a brand spanking new team with brand spanking new investors and these Dennis Wise, Thierry Henry, Cesc Fabregas. There was Michael Essien's wife involved in the whole thing.
Yeah.
This is a club and a city like Como in the north of Italy in all of its beauty with Como Lake, so on and so forth. This is, and with the Indonesian ownership as well, these are the kind of teams that get these foreign supporters into Serie A. So there's all the American owners. And then there's the likes of Monza, because of their links with the Formula One and all of that, and just a city in itself.
Palermo with the City Group.
I'd
like to see southern teams as well. I would need a few more in Serie A.
Yes, I would have loved Palermo to get promoted. Having a representation from Sicily is super important. From Sardinia.
Yeah. And south of Italy, one team, Lecce, but they're honestly, it's moving up north now. You see the map with all the Serie A teams, they're all up north, man. It's wild.
It's also a good thing to note about Como, apart from them having these billionaires that look after their club, they're also their sponsors. They have some other company that sponsors the team, so that is cash flow, which is brilliant.
You know, once Matthew and I played a game of football. He was Como and I was Pisa. And we were taunting each other while playing.
you were singing, "You're just a tower." And no, Parma.
Parma.
Parma, not Pisa. Parma, of course.
You're just ham.
You're just ham.
And you're just a lake. I was playing FIFA and chanting that to each other. You're just a lake.
You're just ham. Oh, Parma. You're just ham.
So a few players they have, Como. They've got Semper in goal, who we've seen in Serie A.
Yes.
Simone Verdi, of course. Federico Barba. Patrick Quatronas, their top scorer and the 14 player of the goals. Season. Yeah, what a beast. And
longer hair now. He's gone through a rebrand.
Yeah, he's got 4 assists as well. Well, he had 4 assists this season. What's his name was there? Alberto Cherry before he was picked up by Empoli as well. Fabio Rispoli is there. Strefezza's there. Goldaniga's there. Baselli's there. Curto Abdelgard's there. You'll remember him at Sampdoria. Sala from Sampdoria as well is there.
So quite
a few well-known players. But to be honest, bro, not a crazy star-studded team. This is all like the work of a team that works together.
Literally. And it is, this is a very well-managed team.
Yeah.
It's not a well-managed team because they have their system and they stick to it, but they adapt to every single game.
You can't
to every single opponent. And I think this was probably the best managed team in Serie B.
Yeah.
Because again, it's the kind of team that before they decide on how they're going to play the game, they have a look at their opponents. Gabriel Loni, the attacking midfielder, scored nine goals for them. He was very, very effective. And yeah, very well-rounded player as well.
Gabriel Loni.
That is Como for you. I'm very excited to see what they can do. Like, let's see what Fabregas is going to do in Serie A. How exciting is that, man?
Very, very exciting.
So far, we've got the beautiful city of Venezia, the beautiful city of Como. And yo, Parma is not bad either. These are some lit destinations in Serie A.
You're just ham.
Parma were easily the best team in Serie A.
They were. They absolutely dominated it using their 4-2-3-1 formation with Barnaby playing behind the main striker. And Barnaby,
bro.
He's good.
Barnaby,
Dennis Mann.
Barnaby sounds like you're speaking Ilib.
So Matthew speaks this language I've never quite understood. It's called Ilib, right?
Yes.
Demonstrate, walk, run us through something.
Ilibes, Ilibai, Spilibik, Ilib.
And explain to the listener how to understand that.
So before every vowel that you say, you put in Ilib. So my name is Milibatilibu. Jake is Jilibakilibi. So let me read a player name. Dennis Mann. The Leben, the Lebis, the Leban. And you can and you can talk shit about anyone when you're speaking.
They have no idea what you're saying.
Bro.
And you can understand it as well, because speaking it is one thing.
That's how I learned it, bro. We used to hang out when we were like 16 and at higher. We had like these female friends in our group, and they used to just be speaking this language to each other. Like, I can totally understand some things of what they're saying. And then someone explained it to me that it's Ilib. And they would just be speaking about us, bro, in front of us in Ilib. Like, and I picked it up, eh?
That's absolutely wild. So yes, on your CV, you can put 3 languages. Ilib being
Bilibarnilibi, man.
Bilibarnilibi. Yeah. The team features strong wingers like Dennis Mann and Mihail, as we said, the 2 Romanians, who will be, I think, seeing a lot of in the Euros. But do you believe in the projected lineups for the Euros? Puskas is starting up front for them. Puskas of Genoa, that kind of...
Wait, for who in the Euros?
For Romania.
For Romania? I don't know.
Romania and the Euros are starting with Puskas of Genoa up front. That guy with the braids. He's starting up front, when it's weird because Mihaila and Dennis Mann weren't even anywhere near the starting
to 11. To be honest, bro, I had no idea any of these guys were Romanian. I'm really not familiar with Romanian.
I kind of like their team, Romania. They've got a pretty good team.
Interesting.
So, solid defense. They have that which remains high with a right back that stays back and the left back is Zagaritis who pushes forward.
Exactly.
Now, the 2 central midfielders are crucial in their system. They initiate play from deep positions and draw the opponent's press to create space for forward passes. This helps them break through the opponent's defensive lines. In defense, Parma form 2 compact lines with their 4 defenders and 2 midfielders, effectively closing vertical passing lanes. This compactness makes it difficult for opponents to penetrate centrally. Offensively, Parma aim to draw out their opponent's midfielders and then attack behind using quick passes. The wingers and fullbacks create overlapping runs, especially on the left side, with the main striker and Mihaila complementary horizontal and vertical movement to destabilize the defense.
Yes, now there's Mihaila, yes, but then there's also, and a player I actually prefer to Mihaila, Benedicak. So he actually, I think, got more minutes than Mihaila. What Mihaila does is he links up really well with the left back, be it Di Chiara or the other one, I forgot his name.
Zagaritis.
It's either Zagaritis or the Chiara, but what Mihaila does is he links up well with them, plays good 1-2s with them, whilst Dennis Mann and Barnaby both shift to the middle. In fact, Dennis Mann, if you look at his heat map, he operates the middle a lot, and Di Prato, does a lot of bombing forward from the right when necessary, because he can be quite,
Bonnie, he's quite involved as well, movement wise.
Not an incredible goal scorer. He's a hold up striker. Yeah.
Parma emphasize vertical play especially. They leverage movements of their attacking midfielders to break through the lines quickly. Cyprien is a player who can pass from deep to find Barnaby, and then he advances the ball and tries to, of course, play to Dennis Mann. Especially Dennis Mann is way too good to be in Serie B. He's probably best player technically in Serie B.
He must love Parma, bro.
He must honestly. He's been there. And he looked good in Serie A. He's a sleeper picker for Fantacalcio, guys, listening.
For sure. Because I was going to make a point. When Benedicciak is on the pitch, he adopts a far more attacking role than Mihaila, getting more involved in the goals and assists. In fact, he has 10 goals, whilst Barnaby has 8 and Mann has 11. And as you guys will see with those stats, the midfielders get most goals. A, because Bonnie loves playing with his back towards goal and helping the midfielders score. And B, they really prioritize inverted wingers. Inverted wingers that love threatening while cutting in on their stronger foot. This is where they have their strongest output, as their three attacking midfielders are their top scorers. But also with the early crosses, where you will see Barnaby getting at the end of some of those early crosses as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to point out that so the wing backs can advance for them, the full backs rather, but their center backs are very good recovery center backs.
Yes.
So they can actually close the gap between them and the strikers very easily. I don't think we need to get much more into it.
In fact, because I geeked out a bit about Parma. Yeah, please. Clearly, so did you.
Yeah.
That is a calculated risk that they take every game, because they play with, they press super high up the pitch. An easy way to exploit that, and they have been exploited before in this way, is by playing the ball over the top. However, with those recovery center backs, not a lot of teams find a lot of success when doing that. So it is a calculated risk. It's like, yes, it's a risk that will be caught out, but with Tomori, it's a calculated risk. So for Serie B standards, that's what they do.
Yeah.
Quick highlight of Pecchia.
Yes, Fabio Pecchia was actually the Juventus next gen manager in 2020.
Yes,
and
was
the manager of Cremonese, Hellas Verona.
That's nothing, bro. This is where the juice is.
Let's hear it.
He was the assistant manager at Napoli under Benitez.
Benitez
took him with him to Real Madrid and took him with him to Newcastle. So much like the Venezia manager with Conte, the Parma manager had that with Benitez.
UV light on this guy and you'll find a little bit of Benitez on it.
I met Benitez's wife and she bad though.
Really?
Yes. A room service. Nice. I'm quite sure I said this on the pod season one. I served her room service. Fucking computer scares the shit out of me. What was I going to say? He got Verona and Cremonese promoted to Serie A. And he also led Juve's under-23 team to winning the Coppa Italia and Serie C. So the Serie C Coppa Italia, the equivalent of that.
Which just gives you basically a guaranteed spot in the playoffs unless you finish in a relegation playoff spot.
Bro. The idea of this episode, guys, as we're drawing to a conclusion over here, is we understand that these are teams that are going to change a lot with the Serie A campaign coming up after the Euros as well. There's going to be a lot of movement manager-wise. We see Venezia that are already looking, and you see that, for example, Grosso took Frosinone to Serie A and fucked off immediately. Mm-hmm. So these are teams that we can see. And a lot of these players are going to be forgotten. A lot of loaned players with Serie A experience are going to be brought in. But this episode was more to celebrate the journey of these teams. Some of these teams, for we know, Como, could be a consistent Serie A team, the same way Monza can be.
Absolutely.
A consistent Serie A team. Maybe Venezia. Parma are one of the most historically successful teams, originally one of the top six teams in Serie A, one of the most decorated teams in Serie A. So this is a celebration of their journey. Next season things are going to be different, but do not worry, our yearly Meet the Boys episode will still air. Or should this be Meet the Boys?
This is Meet the Boys.
But we'll have the...
It's Meet How the Boys Got Here.
Exactly.
We'll have an update. We will...
But we'll do that with every other team. And then we'll run through the teams, 20 teams. We'll still do that. So you'll know exactly what they're going to look like in Serie A. But this is what got them there. And hey, if they stick with their guys, like Como will definitely stick with their management. Now you know.
Absolutely.
Now you know.
Guys, thank you very much. Remember to check us out on social media. Reach out, leave a review, rate us 5 stars. Do all these things, guys.
And guys, if you're not watching us on YouTube and you're still listening on Spotify, if you're traveling, I get you, and it's totally fine.
But commuting, I
do absolutely feel like it is far more engaging and just more enjoyable experience to watch.
There's a comment section, you know, you can leave your thoughts and all that. That's always nice. Shout out to our patrons very quickly. Alan, Andrew, Andy, Anthony, Tim, Campbell, Slooge McNoodle, # who is Slooge McNoodle, # unleash the Slooge, # what was it? What did he say yesterday? It was hilarious.
Anthony, it's one of the, he's like, before we start, guys, I've got some questions for you. Who's Slooge McNoodle? Who are you, bro? Who are you?
I don't know who he is. There are some whispers in the group that it's Lewis, but I don't think it's Lewis. This was hilarious. Why is there Slooge on my noodle? Shout out to Tim. That absolutely killed me. Yeah, who is Slooge? Lena, David, Kyle, Luca, Matthias, Mint, Michael, Tonna, and Ed. Thank you very much, guys. Sick, if you would like to... Yeah?
I'm quite sure...
Mm-hmm.
Theo is a patron.
I don't think so.
Theo is a patron, bro.
Yes.
Theo is a patron.
Shout out to Theo. Thank you very much. I had no idea.
Theo is one of my best friends. Like, we don't shout him out. Theo, I can't be. We don't shout him out.
All right. If you would like to become a patron, guys, that's $3.99 per month. You would really be helping us out and helping improve the quality and our hardware and the way we operate.
We work so
hard, our resources. Man. We do work quite hard, to be honest. So if you do not wish to spend any money, just help our YouTube algorithm, guys. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for all your contributions. We love you all and fucking enjoy the Euros, guys. We'll cover some of that shit soon. Love you all.
This is Serie A Spotlight.
If you like Serie A or have ever liked it in the past, it's a good opportunity for you to listen once a week and you'll get filled in.
In the football weekend, that's like the main dish. But then a few days later, you drop your episode and that's like the dessert. And the dessert is just perfect.
It's good, the cake.
It makes it feel like we're all sitting in a room together, just BSing with each other.
The atmosphere is fantastic.
I promise nobody will ask you to send boob pics.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
I love how you go into so much detail and show so much passion towards each and every team. Literally, no team is left undiscussed.
When I listen to you, it's like I'm talking to you in a pub. It's like I'm chatting to a friend and you're chatting to me.